The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 6. Outside. "What did she say?" Davis asked as they sped down Broadway in the civilian car, blue lights and sirens flashing. Helen had just finished talking to Catherine Williams. "She says everything's fine and she feels safe on her property," Helen replied thoughtfully, looking at the raindrops that the wind threw onto the side window. They crawled along the glass like little bugs. Davis stole a glance at Helen as she fell silent. "But something doesn't suit you, am I right?" "I don't know. I felt she didn't want to tell me everything." She sighed. "Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was just the death of her friend that threw her off track." With a grin, Davis looked over at her once more. "But, of course. As if Helen Louisiani's intuition had ever deceived us." Helen was startled. Davis rarely made a remark that approached being a compliment. She had to smile. "You'd better watch the road," she waved him off. Davis took her advice just in time. A van suddenly emerged from a side alley. Helen held her breath and gripped the back of the seat. Only with a breakneck swerve was Davis able to avoid a collision. The driver of the van honked after them.
"Jesus Christ!" Helen shouted, and Davis wiped the sweat from his brow. "Sorry, but you wanted me to step it up a notch."
"I asked you to step on it, but not to kill us. We're no good to anyone dead. Do you think the two models are in danger?" "Our perpetrator can only reach them right now."
"And you think he dares to do it during a photo shoot?" asked Davis. Helen shrugged her shoulders.
"Chi la dura la vince,"
she replied. Her words hung in the air between them for a moment.
"Damn,"
Davis cursed quietly and floored the gas pedal. "They screwed us," announced Vivian Lemoire, a four-time Vogue cover girl, and lit another cigarette. The noise of the six line thundering past swallowed her friend and colleague up. Despite not being used for decades and only serving as a turnaround loop for the six lines to the Bronx, the subway station remained a popular location for shoots. That's why Vivian and Lauren could think of nothing else when the agency sent them here to shoot together. Everyone knew the name of the fashion label and Jerry, the photographer, and they promised not only prestige, but above all, money. For two old scarecrows like Lauren and her, times had not gotten any better. They were now both in their mid-30s, and that meant their business was about to enter the retirement home. At least if you weren't called Tatiana or Ava, that meant you had to take what you could get. When jobs became rarer, but you weren't prepared to give up your high standard of living, you had to search for alternatives. Diamonds are the girl's best friends. The old Marilyn Monroe was right. "God, I needed this job," thought Vivian.
"I want to regain importance as a model, not just seen as an overpaid whore."
Some time ago, she started working as an escort. Her first client was the CEO of a large meat processing company in Detroit and weighed almost 200 kilos. When she had undressed in front of him, he called room service, ordered a bloody steak, and told her to eat it in front of him before having sex.
"You've got nothing on your ribs, girl. I'll break you in half," he said, and watched her reluctantly choke down the meat.
While he had finally penetrated her at one point, she had almost thrown up with her full belly.
but she held out and only vomited when he had fallen asleep. She did it quietly. She had become skilled at it. She'd had bulimia since she was 12. The man from Detroit must have found her satisfying. Since then, he fucked her once a year, and Vivian was always a few $1,000s richer afterwards. He sent her a large pack of fresh beefsteaks every Christmas. She fed it to her cat. Last year, Lauren had finally persuaded her to accompany her on her business trip to Dubai. Because rich and powerful men were the same everywhere, they liked to adorn themselves with beautiful women. The sheikhs, much richer and more powerful than their usual clients, were no exception. Vivian did not allow herself to be fobbed off by them. She collected at least $300,000 per trip. Unfortunately, the price also included all the extras. Once she even had a gangbang with 26 of the sheikh's selected guests, including 3 film stars, a rap musician, 2 Russian ministers, and a former federal judge. For months afterwards, she had a crying fit at every suitable and unsuitable opportunity, even on the catwalk during a show in Japan, and so violently that the designer had to slap her backstage several times to make her stop. Well, she could bathe in coke for months from her fee. Crap. The K word came back to her. Not good. Got anything? She turned to Lauren. Lauren sighed and handed her a small bottle with a silver spoon attached. After the flash, the vault of the abandoned City Hall station seemed much brighter and friendlier. The subway station was still accessible from the street. When Lauren and Vivian had arrived over 3/4 of an hour ago, they found a note on the open iron barrier. They were informed of a small delay for the team, but the photographer was expected momentarily. They intended to wait on the street, but the rain quickly prompted them to seek refuge in the station. The lights were already on, and the photographer's suitcase was on the mezzanine level. Initially, everything seemed fine, but now they were getting impatient. "I'm off now," Vivian finally said. She was just shouldering her Birkin bag, one of the generous gifts from the sheikhs, when the ground trembled. Apparently, the next train on Line 6 was approaching. Vivian stomped up the stairs to the mezzanine on her Manolos and rummaged in her bag for her cell phone to call her incompetent agent and give him a piece of her mind. She almost stumbled, and as she looked up, cursing, she noticed a figure looming in front of her on the landing. "Jerry? How dare you keep us waiting like this?" she ranted. Even though this guy might not be Jerry, she needed to let off some steam. She could always apologize. She didn't need to take anyone else into consideration. After all, she'd had 4 Vogue covers. Besides, the guy deserved to be ticked off anyway, no matter who he was. He had scared her to death. The stranger said nothing. He was wearing a black oilskin jacket with a hood, gloves, and wellies. A peaked cap protruded from under the hood, with rain dripping from the brim. Vivian couldn't make out the man's face, but she put that down to the fact that she had just been doing coke and her synapses were on fire. The guy in front of her was a cop. "Hey, officer, good to see you," she babbled. "Somehow we lost our team." The stranger still said nothing. Only now did she notice the suitcase at his feet, which she had mistaken for Jerry's photographic equipment. Now open, Vivian noticed a variety of surgical tools inside that she easily recognized from her many visits to different plastic surgeons. She also recognized the object that the stranger was now taking out of the case. However, it had nothing to do with surgery. It was a butcher's knife. Her fat man from Detroit always used to tell her after sex how he had started out in the slaughterhouses and how skillfully he had skinned the cattle with such a knife. The stranger had just such a knife in his hand. Vivian opened her mouth and wanted to scream, but she couldn't get a sound out. A slit opened in the stranger's face. No. Not a slit. Oh my God, that's his mouth. It flashed through her mind. She had a sudden realization about why she couldn't make out the man's face. It had nothing to do with the cap he had pulled so low on his forehead. He had no face whatsoever. The policeman without a face was smiling. She could tell because some teeth were showing in the slit. Dazzling white teeth. The policeman raised his hand to his mouth and did something that stunned Vivian so much that she forgot to scream. He let out a soft shh and then came down the stairs. She should have run away by now. Instead, she only heard herself whisper, "Please, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
The monster paused and tilted its head to the side, seemingly pondering the situation.
All right, it said after a while in a pleasant and gentle voice. Take your clothes off.
What? Asked Vivian stupidly.
I will not hurt you, but you have to take your clothes off.
Vivian thought for a moment.
Okay,
she finally said, and undressed. She dropped her clothes on the floor. The monster took a plastic bag out of the suitcase and threw it at Vivian.
What am I supposed to do with this?
Put your stuff in there.
Why?
Because I'm asking you to.
You promised.
Don't worry.
Lauren came up the stairs.
Hey, Viv, is that the photo?
When she saw the naked Vivian and the stranger, she cried out.
What happened next happened that Vivian only saw it in a blur.
The policeman reached into the suitcase again and hurled a throwing knife at Lauren. It hit her right in the stomach. She collapsed with a scream, sank to her knees, and fell backwards down the stairs. Her gasping also stopped, making Vivian think of muting a television.
Lauren! Oh, God, no! Lauren!
Vivian shrieked.
The monster grabbed her by the arms.
Vivian, look at me. Look at me, Vivian.
Shh.
Vivian looked into the man's non-existent face, and her screams subsided to whimpers. Her stomach tightened. She was going to puke at any moment. But she had eaten nothing yet, and so she only choked out saliva.
Vivian, I promised you. I won't hurt you.
I wouldn't have hurt Lauren, either.
But she surprised me, you know?
Vivian said nothing. She just whimpered.
Do you understand, Vivian?
She nodded.
That's a girl. You'll have to cooperate with me a little, Vivian. Then it'll be over in a minute.
You said you wouldn't hurt me.
I won't hurt you, Vivian.
She calmed down a little. She looked at Lauren. She could see her leg. Agony twitched through it as the shoe, previously dangling from her big toe, cascaded down the stairs.
Vivian looked away, closed her eyes, and waited to die.
Close to her ear, she heard the policeman's voice.
It's all right, Vivian.
Shh.
Everything's all right. I'll take care of her in a minute. I promise, he said gently, took her hand and put something in it.
Vivian felt cold metal and opened her eyes. It was the butcher's knife.
What should I do with this? She stammered.
I promise not to hurt you, Vivian. Do you remember?
The policeman explained as he cut Lauren's clothes off and stuffed them into the plastic bag. I promised you, and I'll keep my word. The slit with teeth appeared again. That's why you're going to do it yourself.
Helen and Davis approached the entrance to City Hall Station, guns drawn. Rain pelted down on them and flowed into the darkness, down the steps of the entrance, which stood wide open. They exchanged a quick glance. Then Helen stepped inside first. She stopped at the foot of the stairs and waited for Davis to catch up with her. He had reached her when the light from her maglite flashlight dimmed and finally died out completely.
Shit, cursed Helen.
Davis took the torch from her hand and handed her his.
I've got another one in the car. Wait here.
Helen nodded. Davis looked at her.
Don't move. I'll be right back.
Okay, okay, she hissed. Her blood boiled with rage as she directed her fury inward. Why hadn't she checked the lamp before? Behind her, she heard Davis coming up the stairs. She turned to look for him, but all she saw was him being swallowed up by the mist of rain at the entrance. Now she was alone, alone in the dark. She wondered how long it would take him to come back.
2 minutes? 3?
Panic was already creeping up inside her.
No, not now, not here.
It was too late. Her whole body trembled.
Oh God, she thought, it's like back then.
No, it's not.
Absolutely. It mirrors the situation from 6 years ago. Cramped, dark, and stuffy.
She pressed herself against the wall. Her throat was tight, and it was difficult to breathe. She felt dizzy.
You can't breathe. You're going to die here. Just like that. From fear.
She gathered all her strength. and hit her head against the tiled wall so hard that for a split second, she saw stars dancing in front of her eyes. The pain that gripped her prevented her from giving in to fear. She struggled to catch her breath and forced herself to look into the darkness. She listened. What was there? She heard something. A soft moan. Here, somewhere near her. She aimed her gun and lamp in the direction of the sound. At the stairs leading to the track level, the narrow beam of light caught the blood-crusted hand of a woman. Helen froze. Damn. Where was Davis? Another groan. Helen bit her lower lip. What should she do? What is there to think about, Helen? Give up. Just give up on her. Just like you gave up on Mendez back then. Rico. His first name was Rico. Fuck the fear. Fuck Davis. Fuck it, she whispered and strolled towards the woman. The stranger was naked and lying on her stomach on the steps, covered in blood. Helen kneeled down next to her and checked her neck for a pulse. Nothing. The woman was dead. She had tried to drag herself outside despite her serious injuries. A bloody crawling trail led down the stairs. Helen let the light of the flashlight slide over the body and swallowed empty. The perpetrator had pulled large chunks of skin from the woman's body. And unlike the skinned Mia Wong, he had taken these with him as a trophy. Helen stood up. Gun at the ready, she descended the stairs and followed the woman's bloody path to its beginning. There, lying on her back, slumped over, was the second victim. Also a young woman, also naked, and also skinned in several places. As with all the previous victims, someone had slashed open her stomach. The woman pressed both hands to the wound. Guts were spilling out of the abdominal cavity between her fingers. Oh my God, she was trying to stuff the intestines back in, Helen thought. Her stomach turned. The woman had to be dead. Nobody survived something like that. But where were the moans coming from? Helen crouched down, put her ear to the mouth of the dead woman, and heard the soft whimpering again. The woman's pulse was barely palpable. She wouldn't make it. Who did this? Helen asked the dying woman. Who did this to you? Run, the woman gasped. Someone had cut her face beyond recognition. Her unbroken green eyes shone like emeralds. What? Helen couldn't understand her. Run, the woman groaned. Only now did Helen realize the woman was trying to warn her. Helen jumped up, but before she could take a single step, two firm hands grabbed her and pushed her forward. She staggered, fell down next to the dying woman, and hit her head on the floor. And she realized, this is a trap. He let the woman live to get me exactly where he wanted me. She tried to turn onto her back, or at least free the hand with the gun under her body, but before she could manage it, she felt a pain. The stranger thwarted her attempt with a cut to her arm. Helen screamed and dropped the weapon. The man kneeled on the small of her back, bent her arms backwards, handcuffed her with her own handcuffs, and pulled her head up by her hair. Now he's going to cut my throat, she thought, and a strange calm spread through her. She lay next to the dying woman with the green eyes. She heard her gasp and felt her gaze. Vivian. Her name is Vivian Lemoire, Helen remembered. I should know the name of the woman I'm going to die next to. And then, unexpectedly, she heard a gunshot. Davis rummaged in the glove compartment of the car for the batteries. There had to be another damn pack somewhere. He finally found it in the far back corner. Gotcha! He triumphantly held the batteries in his hand. He had just reached the stairs again when he heard a bang. Damn it, Helen! You were supposed to wait, he thought, and jumped down the stairs. At first, Helen wasn't sure if it was really a gunshot. It was only when she looked at Vivian that she realized what had happened. Somehow Vivian had picked up Helen's gun. Now she held the gun in her hand and pointed it in the killer's direction. With the last of her strength, she pulled the trigger, then pulled it again. But the shots missed their target. Die! She gasped, sobbing, and lowered her hand powerlessly. The killer turned towards her, and Helen watched as he plunged the butcher's knife into her chest. Vivian slumped down, Her gaze became fixed and broke. Helen wanted to scream, but she couldn't make a sound. Her throat remained silent. Her thoughts were racing. She had to get up at all costs, or at least turn onto her back. That was the only way she could defend herself against this madman. At least a few seconds, at least until Davis finally came back. In order to carry out his cruel deed, the stranger had to shift his weight. Now he only pressed one knee into her back. Helen took a deep breath. As if in a dream, she pushed herself up onto her knees with a jerk and rolled onto her side with all her strength. She only glimpsed his disbelieving look, then she kicked him between the legs with lightning speed. He let out a surprised cry, lost his balance, and fell over. She took another swing and kicked him in the chest. He groaned in pain as Helen crawled back on her elbows, groping for the weapon that had slipped from Vivian's grasp. She finally got hold of it and propped herself up on her hips, turned her arms to the side despite the restraints, and pulled the trigger. But only a muffled click sounded. The gun jammed. Shit, she thought, gasping for breath. In the meantime, the killer had pulled himself together again and swung the knife. Helen stared wide-eyed at the blade, which came closer and closer and exploded in mid-motion. Helen and the killer spun around. Davis flashed through Helen's mind. She heard his voice. Freeze, he shouted. Drop it. The killer seemed to obey Davis's order. He stood motionless with his head bowed, the knife still in his hand, resembling a statue. The ground beneath Helen's feet trembled. At first, she thought it was the shock, but then they were all bathed in glaring light. The screeching of Line 6 drowned.
The train!
Shouted Helen. With the agility of a ballet dancer, the killer turned on his heel, jumped onto the step of the last carriage, and clung to the door handle.
Shoot!
Helen yelled at Davis, even though she knew he couldn't hear her. Davis took aim and fired. His bullet hit the man in the arm. Helen saw him flinch without letting go. Then he pulled himself into the wagon. He looked back through the window, and even though the train was moving faster and faster, Helen was convinced that the killer was looking straight into her eyes. She even thought she saw a grin on his face. Then Davis was with her. Damn it, what happened? He asked as he released her from the handcuffs. Helen wrapped her arms around him. He held her, embarrassed. You're bleeding all over me, he finally said to say something, making her laugh. In that moment, she loved him the way a traumatized, neurotic single woman could only love a married colleague with two children who had just saved his life. She looked at him. You got him, she said. Looks like it, he replied curtly and holstered his gun. Hours later, Helen closed the door of her apartment behind her. She put the chain in front of her and slid onto the floor, leaning against the wall. What a shitty day, she said into the silence of her home. Then the tears came, unrestrained. All this time, Helen had held them back. Not anymore. All the dams broke, flooding her fear and the horror of the day with a salty tide. She felt a little better after that. She forced herself to stand up and only now realized that she was sitting on her mail. She pulled the envelopes out from under her, which were guaranteed to contain only bills, and an advertising flyer for an Ethiopian restaurant, and a newspaper. Oh, damn it, Barney, she said aloud, glad to hear her own voice. Barney, the landlord, took it upon himself to throw the newspapers through the tenants' mail slots. Unfortunately, at almost 80, Barney didn't take it anymore. Helen would never subscribe to the National Inquisitor or a similar cheesy paper. She was wondering if perhaps Mr. Harris of 308 was the subscriber of the paper, and she should leave his reading on his doorstep, when her eyes fell on the headline. There were only four left. Third top model murdered. Helen quickly scanned the report that a certain Douglas Melvin had written. Why was this guy linking the death of Anuradha Appala to the murders of the other two models? Helen had only spoken to Davis about the whole thing. Melvin had to know more than either of them. That was the only logical explanation. And instead of sharing his information with the police like a decent journalist would, clean-cut Mr. Melvin had made the story front-page news. What an asshole, growled Helen. A meow sounded from the kitchen. Columbus, her little gray cat, was checking on her well-being.
Hey, Bus.
Helen stroked his back in greeting. Your can opener has a fucking rage in her stomach. The cat looked at her, came closer, dropped to the floor, and purred loudly. Helen took it as an invitation to tell the story.
Well, your can opener had a shitty day, you know, and if I hadn't been killed today, I'd be back downtown kicking Mr. Melvin's greasy ass.
The cat meowed again, and Helen nodded at him.
You're right. Now I'm going to open a can for you, and then I'm going to take a long, long hot bath.
This seemed to be acceptable to the Tom, because he got up and sauntered ahead to his bowl. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.